Blog Talk Radio.
Converted Mets fan Sam Maxwell, and you are here with the Metsian podcast, and we're so thankful that you are. You know, we're coming up on a holiday of more or less like the unofficial end of summer, but, you know, it's hot town, summer in the city. Like I alluded to, the Love and Spoonful song in the title of this podcast, this is pennant baseball. This is everything we've always asked for, you know, the meaningful games that everybody always alluded to when it came to the Wilpons. And we will certainly mention the Wilpons, but only in the context of thank God Almighty they're gone when we discuss the Wilpons today on the Metsian podcast. And without further ado, let us go around the tri-state to our co-conspirators in podcasting crime, and that will start down in Brooklyn around my hair part of Flatbush, and we'll start with Mr. Mike Lacolant down in Bensonhurst. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing okay. Let's go Mets. Another wonderful day in the city.
Another wonderful day indeed, and we're going to head up 95 South over to Mr. Spirago in Connecticut. How you doing, Rich Spirago?
Doing well. Doing well, Sam. You know, not a lot to complain about. I mean, we as Mets fans will always find something, but you know, there's not a lot to complain about. And as I see it, and I don't know, this is the way just my brain works, but I think once the Mets get back into action tomorrow night, it's truly the stretch run. I mean, you could say, when does the stretch run begin? Nobody knows. But to me, the way I'm sitting, the stretch run starts. They've had, you know, two off days. They needed them Thursday and today, Monday. But now it's back to business. This is really time to suck it up. And, you know, then this is, you know, 33 games left. And in my opinion, when baseball starts tomorrow night, it'll truly be the pennant race, stretch, whatever you want to call it. So it's all good. And the fact that the Mets are in it, not on the outside looking in, as they've been way too many times in my lifetime, it's all good.
The Mets are in a defensive position, and, you know, that's something that we don't generally find them, especially when it comes to the Braves. But before we really get into the nitty-gritty of the actual 2022 pennant race, because I think the Mets are in a good position, they're at three games. Luckily, the Braves actually lost the last 2 days. The Mets won only once the last 2 days, which just has generally not happened when the Braves have been concerned lately. And the Mets are, like I said, in a defensive position. But this past weekend, this was something 28 years in the making. And unfortunately, it wasn't actually in the making for 28 years. I'll start with you, Rich, since you were there. Old Timers Day, there was just something commencing in a weird way. As much as we were looking behind, there was something celebratory about looking ahead to a past not forgotten, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's well said, Sam, and I – you know, Old Timers Day, you know, Mike and I remember when they did it every year. It was a normal thing. And okay, you know, that's fine. You should honor your team's history. That's great. This one, though, you know, if you read Howie Rose's tweet, he called it Woodstock South. This one was something that had a lot of meaning for a lot of different reasons. Yes, it had been 28 years. That's reason one, check. Reason number two is the team is once again embracing its history, Seaver statue, you know, all those things. That's number two, check. Number three to me was symbolic. And what I mean by that, if you read the tweets from Todd Pratt, you know, and some of the other people who were there, the Mets, you know, flew everybody in. I don't know if it was first-class ticket, but I'll say in a first-class manner, treated them, you know, with kid gloves. What it shows, it's yet another plank in the platform that the New York Mets are no longer, you know, the penny-pinching, laughingstock, little brother thing that we've had to endure for so long. It's yet another example that this franchise is operating and will continue to operate in a first-class manner, in a top-shelf manner, in a New York manner. It means that, you know. So it's all of those things. It's old-timers day, long overdue. Yeah, for sure, of course. But to me, what it meant most is just how this organization is run now versus before. And I think it's just another reason that we as Mets fans have every – we really should be optimistic. It's just, it's another reason to believe. And, you know, I know that's partially a pun, but that's what it meant to me. So that was my observation.
Mike, you know, yes, you got to believe. It could very well, the karma could be the same. But there's something about that you talk about. That the Wilpons lack. And even if the aura may stay the same, there's something about the preparation that is obviously completely different.
Ah, the seven P's. Proper prior planning prevents piss poor performance. You know, what an emotional day. My entire life literally flashed before my eyes. I turned 55 this year, and I have a full recall of the Mets since 73, 74, more 74 because he was a little spotty. I spent some time out of the country. But I wasn't left on my own. You know, I had my aunt, my uncle, my other uncle, my other uncle, my mother, a lot of family members educating me. I'm grateful for that. And what happened is all that came back. It's been missing for so long. What transpired over the weekend just shows how badly and how poorly previous ownership handled this team's not only individual legacy as the New York Metropolitans, but its National League legacy. This team is the torchbearer of that National League legacy of New York City. And there's a responsibility that comes with that that's long been ignored in part. Of course, we know previous ownership's affinity with the Brooklyn Dodgers. But our lineage comes more through the Giants than anything because of Mrs. Joan Payson, and we shared a playing field with the Giants at different times in our eras. But nevertheless, at one time or another, we both called the Polo Grounds home. So everything that transpired was a not just a home run, Sam, but a grand slam of all time. And all that came back to me. And I tweeted, you know, for fun, that my face is a mess, that I was crying. And my nose was just oozing all kinds of liquids, and my face was just a wreck. But it's true, because all that came back to me, and they got it so right. Every Met fan of every generation had something to cheer for and applaud and to be thankful for that day. Every single one who can either watch or be there or, you know, or just hear about. The Mets are back. At least my Mets are back. And they've been gone for a long time because they were taken away from us. We were denied that. Sure, there was a team on the field playing, and they were you know, wore Met uniforms. And no, but something dramatically, radically changed. And we know what that is, and I'm not going to name names. But this weekend just showed how much or how far we've been separated from that. And now that we're rejoined, I'm rejoicing. I couldn't have been happier with the way this weekend played out. Every single bit of it. I mean, Frank Thomas was there, and he looked great. Jay Hook was there. Everybody from every year. Everybody had a favorite on that field that day. I was so happy to see John Stearns. But reconciliation and just a tremendous job by Mr. Jay Horowitz. But of course, none of this could have ever happened without Mr. Steve Cohen, and thank you to him and his family. And I'll say this last word in regards to what took place over the weekend. Buck Showalter said it. He said that owners don't want to really pay for this. And, well, I think that speaks for itself.
Yeah, it does. Thinking about the legacy, early part of 62, 63, was kind of all about the Dodgers and Giants, Mike, like you said, and the Dodgers are coming in. But the reason the Dodgers are such a draw this time around is not because they used to play in Brooklyn. It's because you have the top one and two teams playing against each other. And it did seem to be such an interesting little juncture to do this with the Dodgers coming in, considering there hadn't been as much a callback to the Giants. And they tried to brush it off as the seats being the color of Polo Grounds. But that was, as we all know, a load of horse, you know what. Rich, with all that said, I say that the MVP of the old-timers game was Mookie Wilson. What say you?
That's right. I think he did not look like a – I think he's 64. He did not look like a 64-year-old man out there. And, you know, God bless Mookie. I mean, you know, Mookie speaks to people, you know, closer to my age, our age, right? Because, you know, Frank Thomas, I've never saw him play. And, you know, Jay Hook, I mean, is just a name to me, you know. But Mookie, of course, was, you know, part of the big part of the 86 team and then Buckner and all that. And so, you know, so, yeah, Mookie definitely was the MVP. But just, I just want to say something else that I know is not going to make me the most popular person on this podcast. But I feel like I have to. And it's just it'll be fun to discuss it. You know, you mentioned that. It's interesting they did it with the Dodgers coming in and all of that. Okay. My opinion is I really, really think it's time to stop with the Dodgers and the Giants. I think the Mets now need to stand on their own. It's been 64 years since those teams left. The fact is, gentlemen, a lot of the guys who played in those teams are deceased. A lot of the fans of those teams are deceased. It's time. It's time to come into the current era and stop talking. And this is my opinion. I'm talking about you guys. I'm in general. And stop idolizing the past of the Dodgers and the Giants. These teams still exist, and they compete with the Mets. The Giants knocked the Mets out of the 2016 playoffs. Honoring them in any way, other than saying they once played in New York, no. As far as I'm concerned, no. Stop. It's 64 years. Let it go. The New York Mets are now the National League team in New York. If we want to say the Giants Dodgers played there, like I said, that's fine. They don't romanticize the Mets. They didn't romanticize the Mets in 1988 when the Dodgers knocked them out. So it's time to stop. Seriously. We have to – this is part of the Mets being the Mets. The Mets honoring their own history. It's time to stop with the Dodgers and the Giants. And I think that is partially the reason – why Mets history isn't what it could be. It's because we're constantly, you know, pointing to their parents, the Dodgers and the Giants. Okay. We've done that for too long. That's my opinion. And to me, what we saw on Saturday is a step in that direction. it's time for the New York Mets to be the Neil right. Armstrong and put their flag in the ground and say, we are the National League New York team, not the Dodgers and the Giants. We don't have to honor them. We don't have to talk about them. They don't talk about the Mets. They want to beat the Mets. They're not romanticizing the New York Mets. They want to beat them. The Dodgers could knock the Mets out again this year. What are we doing? Why are we doing this? I don't get it. I mean, anyway, that's my opinion. It's just something I wanted to say.
So I will take this to you, Mike, with that. I agree in many ways, especially for somebody who wants to kind of bridge the two eras together thematically, filmmaking-wise. But that's always kind of – I've always looked at it separately and understood the gripe that Met fans had with the way that the Wilpons went about honoring Jackie Robinson. Now, mind you, that specific thing should be honored the way it is, the way it's been presented. But so many fans thought not – they basically used – Jackie Robinson and that Rotunda legacy to be the issue with the Mets and Fred Wilpon and Jeff Wilpon not honoring their history, not honoring the Mets' history. This also led to the talk of a lack of honoring the New York Giants. Now, what Rich is talking about, I agree with. However, I do believe in this particular case, specifically with Willie Mays, and the way that the Mets did it on this old-timers' day, I think they are both saying in many ways goodbye to the Dodgers and the Giants and honoring the connection, that the bridge that is in their logo, basically, the reason for that bridge, which is a bridge from the past to the future. Willie Mays in many ways represents this and is a reminder that Joan Payson mattered and Joan Payson still matters. And very right after her death, there was this neglect for that memory.
I don't disagree with anything that's been said. I will say that I view this through the perspective of a native New Yorker and a Brooklynite. And I see the greater narrative, you know, and when I say that, I do mean going back, you know, to the Gothams and the Bridegrooms and, you know, on through baseball history. That's the way I view it. However, Rich is right. Mets history, Mets should be first and foremost and trump all. That should be paramount in Flushing and throughout the city, National League fans, that is. And yes, the Dodgers and the Giants should be placed way back in the rearview mirror and shouldn't really enter the conversation with the modern-day Mets. I agree with all of it. We need to let that go. However, you know, I take the historic perspective. I enjoy it. But I don't dare include it in my daily talk of the Mets. And let's, you know, say very plainly, the Wilpons blew it. They did not have the Mets first and foremost on their minds. Every time I walk upon Citi Field, there's a part of me that is just completely disgusted. And that's wrong for a Met fan to feel. And unless they, you know, implode that building and build something new that reflects Mets history much more better and aptly, I'm forever going to have that feeling. I can't get over it. I just can't. And Rich, you're right. I wish, you know, everything would be compartmentalized, and some people don't know how to do that. But that's my personal issue walking upon Citi Field. I just can't get Ebbets Field out of my head. I can't get the Dodgers out of my head. And as a Met fan, that's so wrong. And we know who to blame. And so I compartmentalize, you know, I try to separate all this and you know, not really twist my mind with all that minutia. Sam, you and I do it in a historic perspective. And, you know, we broach the subject from time to time on this podcast, and we all read books, and we're all interested in baseball history, and I'm a little bit more interested in New York City history, blah, 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 blah. But Rich is right. But the foundation for that was originally set, but the next ownership came in and crumbled it and gave us a slab, so to say. And now, you know, they're trying to rebuild, but the foundation is still shaky, man. And that's the way I feel when I find Citi Field. I'm sorry. I can't help it.
But, Mike, you're right. See, that's the whole thing. The whole thing is the Mets have to be the Mets, right? And it's okay. Or if you want to talk about the historical nature of the Dodgers, that's fine. But not that the Mets came from them. The Mets need to disassociate themselves from that.
Exactly.
And I think
it came at their expense.
Right. And, you know, you're right. Citi Field is an ever-living, or shouldn't be ever, someday it'll be torn down, but you know what I mean, reminder of it, right? And which is a faux pas, right? It is. But we have to get past that because that building's not going anywhere. But see, to me, it's like, let's build off of Saturday. Let's build off of that, especially in a year where the team may be on the pace to do some amazing things. You know, if nothing else, this team probably should end up with the second most wins in franchise history. Pretty damn good after 60 years, right? And this, and God willing, you know, do something else pretty special. Saturday was, hopefully all these ducks line up, you know? I mean, Saturday was finally embracing the history of the Mets, not other teams that are no longer here. And maybe this is the year that, you know, that it just kind of, you know, in a cosmic kind of a way, ends up in something special happening for this current team. And finally, you know, that's, you know, it's like the Jets, you know, when they played at Giant Stadium, right? that matters. You know? It doesn't matter to the players, I get that, but it, right, the fans that have an identity. They played in freaking Giants. It said right on it, Giants Stadium. Who the hell thought that was a good idea? And it's just you have to have your own identity. I don't want to kill the whole podcast talking about this. You guys know what I'm saying, but I think we're on the same page.
Well, it's funny that now, you know, it's named something else corporately, and they get to change the colors of the lights every single time, so they can have their own stadium for a moment. Oh my God, we're going to go on the football tear in a second, but I think just, you know, I understand all sides of it, but their bottom line is that the one side that you can't be against is celebrating Mets history. I mean, let's just remember, in 2009, there were no orange and blue pictures of the team hanging anywhere. It was all sepia trying to push Nokia. This is what happened. So there's a part of
there was,
of Citi Field.
There was no home. There was no home run apple either, or a Hall of Fame.
Right.
Right. There was no Hall of Fame. The home run, the Shea home run apple was hidden in the bullpen. So were the pennants. This is what we have to deal with. And this is why, since building a stadium this little amount of years later after building another one, I wouldn't mind.
Hey, you know what? The Texas Rangers did it. The Braves did it. We can do it, too.
We can do it. No, but the problem obviously, you know, is bureaucratic, because when you look at what the Wilpons got done and the fact that they just did it next door to where they used to live. There's a reason why they did it next door to where they used to live, and it may be a tough time. Unless you could really sell Sunnyside Yards, because that's the only way this happens, is if you go downtown stadium and Steve Cohen pays for the whole fucking thing. Excuse my language. That's it. That's the only way this gets done, but I digress. Let's go back only briefly, because leading up to what we are about to witness with the Dodgers coming, I want to talk about what has happened since the last time we were on the podcast. And I'll start here. They were able to get that Philly series at home, 1-0 the 13th and 6-0 on the 14th. But I want to look at the Braves series, and I'm going to start with you, Rich, here. They're 3 games ahead of the Braves right now, and we know the way scheduling works. I'm so thankful there's no half game happening between either the Mets or the Braves tonight. But when looking at the 17th, when they won 9-7, even though they ended up losing 3 out of 4 here, Rich, with everything that has happened since, I view this as the ultimate reason the Mets are still in first place.
No, I think that's right. I mean, I think everybody talked about when the Mets were about to play the Braves. They played Washington, and then on a Wednesday afternoon on the 4th of August, then they started, you know, the 5-game series against Braves and played right through, you know, the doubleheaders and blah, blah, blah. And they went 18-9. Okay, most of those games are on the road. You know, 5-game series, of course, is at home. But they played 27 games in 26 days, and they went 18-9. Most games on the road. Pretty darn good, right? Now, in that time, the Braves held serve. You know, the Mets beat them 4 out of 5, but then the Braves beat the Mets 3 out of 4, and the Mets just can't seem to shake the Braves. But okay, with all that said, focus on what the Mets can control, which is their own destiny. And they did damn well, and they're continuing to do it. 3 out of 4 against the Rockies at home, it's pretty good. You know, it's not a sweep, but I think it's just the way we, you know, I wanted a sweep. I was not happy after yesterday. But we have to take into context that the New York Mets are doing very good things on the baseball field lately, very good things. It's just the Braves are on this magic carpet ride where they can't seem to lose other than the last two nights. So to get back to your question, the series in Atlanta, you know, you saw what the Braves have to offer. You know, the Braves slugged. They slugged in that series. And one thing that I think is true, if we had to come up with, a point of contention with the Mets is during, again, 18-9 is really good. The one thing they're not doing as much is they're not grinding out as many at bats. I think a lot of people have observed that. So maybe that's an opportunity. But what you saw in Atlanta was, you know, the sluggers outdid the grinders. The grinders didn't grind as well. The sluggers did quite well. And they won 3 out of 4. Then, and I think, Sam, we're probably getting here, but we have to talk about the series in Philadelphia. And that Sunday game was epic. That, you know, the Mets winning 3 out of 4 there. And that Sunday game was just epic. That's where you saw the Mets go back to being the grinding Mets. And that's what they're doing. You know, they're playing good baseball. They're finding different ways to win. People were complaining that they only, you know, quote, only beat the Rockies by, you know, 2 runs on Thursday night and then, you know, barely beat them on Friday night. And the Mets left a village on base on Saturday night. But they're still 1-3 out of 4. So here's my bottom line. The Braves series, yes, the sluggers outdid the grinders. Okay, that's going to happen. But overall, if we take everything in context, 18-9 in 27 games in 26 days is good for any team, no matter who you're playing. And the Mets had some stiff competition there against the Braves and Phillies. So while it's easy to get, you know, up in arms about a game here and a game there, looking at the big picture, it's a damn good baseball team.
Exactly. You are listening to the Metsian podcast, and we're so thankful that you do. And, Mike, I'm going to go to that Philly series like Rich was talking about. But in context, oddly, with this recent Colorado series, and I want to start with Mark Canna. I think what the Colorado series, even though we won 3 out of 4, what it shows us is that, you know, the guys ahead of Mark Canna can't always leave it up to Mark Canna like they did in some of these at-bats in the Rockies series. And he's not always going to be able to come through every time like you did in the Philly series.
No, you're right. You know, we can't let expectations get too high and let our imaginations get away from us. You know, Mark Canna is Mark Canna. He's not Albert Bell. but, you know, that 1-0 game, look, this is baseball. As Rich said, we took 3 out of 4 from the Rockies. Right now, you know, since we last spoke, the Mets are 9-8. That's a game over par. Let's not forget, you know, early in the month, yeah, we won 4 out of 5 from the Braves, but then we played them again, and they got the better of us. They took 3 out of 4. That's baseball. But let us not forget, we suffered a couple of injuries, one to a pitcher, infielders. We had to bring up Brett Beatty. So, you know, we had a little bit of adversity to deal with. We bounced back against the Phillies. We took them, you know, in both of those respective series. And with the Yankees, you know, we got the better of them the last time we played them. They got the better of us this time around. That's baseball. The difference between now and last year is by this time last year, the Mets were out of first place. So what we're talking about is their sustainability. And the Mets are still in first place, and they're going to finish the month in first place. They're just going to have to battle it out and, you know, buckle up, because that series at the end of the year, second to last series with the Braves, I think that's going to be quite meaningful and decisive. But right now, you know, let's not forget baseball is ruled by the law of averages. So right now, you know, they're dealing with a couple of things. Let's hope Carrasco comes back. You know, we've been having to shuffle this pitching staff, the starting pitchers, and we've seen the results of that. You know, so hopefully they can get it back together and be competitive, you know, throughout any of these losses. I don't see the Mets getting outplayed. They're in these games. If they don't hit with runners in scoring position, et cetera, whatever. But they're not getting outplayed. They're in every game. They're competitive. And as you say, these guys are good. It's a good team. You know, so let them regroup after this day off, the Dodgers. You know, get well against Washington. And then go on the road and do damage in Pittsburgh and Miami. One game at a time. So far, it's still fun. It's still a lot of fun. Losing 1-0 or no. The rest of the series is still fun. And all of this is good. You know, I'm not going to let one game destroy my mental outlook on this season. It's been so joyful, and I'm going to continue to view it that way.
I'll see you in Pittsburgh, Mike. More to discuss later. Anyway. don't know whether that's going to happen, but I think when you look at the last bit of the schedule, you know, Rich, Mike brought up a lot of different stuff there, and where I want to start with is Brett Beatty. What have you liked? What haven't you liked? What do you think he needs to get better at? The good, the bad, and the ugly.
The good is that, you know, he has that sweet, sweeping left-handed swing. You know, kind of like a strawberry swing. He's long and lean, and he takes a nice long uppercutting swing. And you know he's got power. You know, he's shown it. He's had a couple of home runs, but he's also had some really high exit velocities on balls. And so he generates a lot of power in that bat, and that's something to be really jazzed about. He defensively hasn't looked awful. He's had a couple, you know, he's had one, I think he bobbled, but he's, you know, made all the necessary plays for the most part. I mean, he hasn't stuck out to me as being poor defensively. But what does he need to get better at? Well, you know, the same stuff a lot of guys who have very little time at AAA have to get better at. He's still not making enough contact. He still, you know, could use a little bit of polish defensively. He's not bad, but maybe he can use a little bit of polish defensively. And he just looks like a guy who has a promising future, who was brought up way too soon because they had a need. And, okay, other teams do that too. You know, Keith likes to talk about how, you know, he was brought up and then he was sent back down. There's nothing wrong with that. There's no shame in that. I think we're seeing that, you know, he's hitting, what, like 150 or so, and that might even be generous. And he just needs a little – the game comes at you very quickly on the major league level. He just needs to sharpen his skills a little more in AAA, and he probably needs a little more time down there. That's all. But I think there's a lot to be positive about. You know, I think he can be a power hitting left-handed power hitting third baseman, and what's not to like about that? It's not there yet. And if the Mets were, you know, I happen to have the Twins Red Sox on, and if the Mets were the Red Sox, basically out of the picture, let the kid stay up all year. You know, let him get those at bats on this level and be ready for next year. I personally don't think the Mets have the ability to do that. I think they have to put their best players on the field, and right now he's probably not one of them, so I say send him back. I mean, send him down. He's hitting 184 at the moment. I just think he has to work on, you know, making more contact, getting used to the speed of the game at AAA, so when they bring him up the next time, it's for good. Those are my thoughts.
Mike, you know, there's two days left basically in the month before rosters expand. And they're talking about even bringing up Mark Vientos when that happens. So do you think the Mets are just holding off till – I don't even know what the numbers are, and maybe you can enlighten me regarding that in terms of roster expansion. But, you know, Louis Guillorme, you and I discussed this earlier today off air, that – basically, they're waiting for Louis Guillorme to be done with his rehab assignment to make a decision on Brett Beatty, because it wouldn't make sense for them to have all three of them, Escobar, Guillorme, Beatty. But the rosters are about to expand. I thought they had changed it to not it. So what is the number? Considering I'm pretty sure there was something about it not being 40 anymore. So, Mike, do you know what the number is that it will expand to on September 1st?
I do not. Not off the top of my head, no. But I do know it changed, like you said. You know, usually the problem is owners don't want to pay. That's usually the problem. You know, rebuilding teams, they have no qualms pulling up players for September. But usually it's the owners who just don't want to pay, and therefore they didn't do it. Excuse me for a second. I have to clear my voice. It'll be interesting to see what they do. You know, you got to start the clock sometime. I'm not saying do it. We're not. I'm just sitting on the fence on this one. At some time, you got to do it. The Mets started doing it in 83 and 84, and you know where that got us. They did it again, leading up to 15. So at some point, you know, you got to do it. So if this
this is 12 players left, Rich, than what we had been used to, what it used to be when the entire 40-man roster was up for grabs. It is now 28. So there are decisions to be made once September 1st rolls around.
Absolutely. And I mean, certainly one thing that could happen is you just keep Beatty here, right? And you have, but I agree with what you said, Sam. I mean, you have Guillorme and Escobar, and what's Beatty going to do? You know, left-handed pinch hitter. Is that the right thing to do to this kid, you know, who clearly needs more reps? I don't think it is. I mean, I think he'd benefit from more time down. So, you know, one interesting possibility roster-wise, you guys know that Travis Jankowski's back in the organization, and I know, you know, he clearly struggled at the plate, but here's a guy, you know, you see Vogelbach, right? Vogelbach, I have my own opinions on that. I mean, I like Vogelbach a lot, but he can't move. I mean, I don't know why he's on the active roster right now. I don't see why you have a guy who has a hamstring issue. I don't get it. I mean, give the guy a 10-day DL stint, and or if it takes 2 weeks or more, let him get healthy for the postseason. You know, I don't see what they're doing. The other night when he did that double play against the Yankees, it took him 45 minutes to run down to first base. But, you know, the Mets at times need a pinch runner, and or maybe a replacement, you know? I mean, time the guy with a calendar, right? But, I mean, but Jankowski could be that defensive whiz in the outfield, could play all three positions. He could be the pinch runner. If you're going to keep Vogelbach active, well, you're going to need maybe in the ninth inning, he leads off with a walk in a tie game. You need a speed, right? Naquin runs well, but maybe he'll be weird in the game. So anyway, Jankowski's a possibility. I know he's not on the 40 right now because he was DFA. They'd have to make a move. But I think that's a possibility. I don't think keeping Brett Beatty here makes any sense to me for the reasons you've already said. But they, unlike past years, like you said, where it was like everybody and their brother was up, you know, they had everybody in the dugout. They'd show the dugout, and the dugout would be full all the way down, which I always thought was nonsensical anyway. Teams have to be very strategic. And then maybe, you know, maybe like Mike said, maybe it's the almighty dollar driving it, who knows. But the fact is that they have to be very strategic about adding two more players and who those guys will be. I personally would like to see maybe would like to see Jankowski and maybe Vientos. You know, get a power-hitting bat who seems to be doing quite well, thank you very much. You know, send the guy down who seems to be struggling, give Vientos his shot, and bring Jankowski up because the team could use the, you know, defensive replacement and the pinch runner.
Mike, I'll go here with that. The thing about Vientos is I feel as if this needs to happen in the next 2 days. Otherwise, let's say Vientos does have the impact you're hoping for. Why would you want to lose that? Is the same thing with September 1st and the playoff roster? Is that still in effect? Because at that point, if he can be effective at all, why would you want to not take him into the playoffs?
Well, I'll answer that with another question. Kind of. Will Buck Showalter find him useful? In his mind, how creative can he be with these call-ups? That's, to me, the bottom line. Can Buck Showalter optimize these call-ups? And if he doesn't think so, I think he's going to speak up.
Yeah, no, I would agree on that. You know, yeah, so the way I'm looking at it right now, in a typical season, any player who is on the 40-man roster or the 60-day injured list, there's a 11:59 p.m. ET on August 31st, is eligible for the postseason. So according to the way I just read that, Rich, if they're on the 40-man by August 31st, he could still, let's say it's Vientos, just hypothetically speaking, he could still be on the playoff roster.
Yeah, that's always been the case, actually. Anybody on the 40 as of the 31st, the difference this year is more like, you know, what you said earlier, which is that they only expanded 28 rather than 40, but the having to be on the 40 to be eligible for the postseason, having to be on the 40 by midnight on September 1st, right, that has changed. So Vientos is eligible, right? He doesn't have to be on the major league team as long as he's on the 40 by September 1st. But I think what Mike said is accurate, you know? They have to figure out what combination of 40 men do they need to be able to pull from, and they have to figure that out in two days and an hour and 2 hours and 15 minutes. They have to figure that out. They may have to DFA somebody, which I think you will see, to put Jankowski on the 40 so he becomes an option. Vientos is on the 40. Okay, fine. you know, I believe Khalil Lee, who hasn't sniffed the majors all year, I don't think he'd be a guy that they'd consider for the postseason. But, you know, guys like that are your depth down there. But, again, I'm at the risk of sounding like a broken record. I'm big on putting Jankowski on the 40 by midnight on September 1st. So he'll be eligible. I do think guys like that can be invaluable in the postseason. You know, you think about it, right? You get – think about the Mets team. You get a Vogelback or you get a Nito on the bottom of the ninth leading off in a tie game. You're not letting those guys run, right? Why not get a guy – why not have a guy with elite speed, you know? And let him do it. Let him get on the base paths. And, you know, maybe you have a situation where, you know, goodness knows Marte's playing with a – I guess an okay groin, not fully healed, because he has that fourth gear that he throws it in every now and then, which, by the way, the catch he made Saturday night was fantastic. He threw it in the fourth gear there, and he picked that ball off in the gap. But anyway, so, again, I won't say any more about it, but I believe Jankowski should be added, hopefully he is, and he becomes an option. But, right, they have to think about strategically, based on the players they have, something like Vogelback's injury, who you have, who you don't have, what's the best combination to take into the postseason, make sure those guys are on the 40, and then pull from there.
And that's a good place to go next, Mike, is just looking at September. You know, the only the only thing we have to look at with August is the Dodgers series. Forward after that, you know, the Mets are running into a bunch of spoiled series, especially the Athletics, who just spoiled the Yankees. The Mets still have to go into Milwaukee, and the Brewers, you know, kind of their plans didn't go exactly to fruition when it came to the trading deadline. So that should be an interesting series, one way or another. When looking at this, you know, this Mike, this is a big measuring stick, no matter what happens. I mean, I would say that the Mets need to make sure, obviously, they don't get swept one way or another, because they are three games up, and who knows what can happen with the Braves over those 3 days. But this is an exciting series. I mean, this is when you're looking at the let's include the Brewers series, but basically the most consequential series leading up to the Braves, this has to take the cake over the next month and a month that the Mets have to play.
There's a lot of foil out there. I'm glad you posed it that way. All right, this Dodger series, yeah, it's important, but you know what? I'm not going to put any more emphasis on this than I am any other. There's a lot of landmines out there, all right? This is the time of season where, you know, you take nobody for granted. You know, you're going to play just as hard against the Dodgers as you are against Pittsburgh. That's where we are. And there's a couple of guys in that dugout who aren't going to let complacency find a seat. You know what I mean? So, yeah, this Dodger series... what are they? They're the measure of the National League right now. So, yeah, you would like to defeat them. You would like to take at least 2 out of 3. You know, if we lose the series, you know, 2-1, if we get swept, I have to harken back to what Rich was alluding to before. You know, let's jump back into glory and go to 1988. We destroyed the Dodgers all season. And what they do to us in the playoffs. You know, so, again, we're in a stretch right now. Like I said, 9-8 over their last 17 games. It's just the way it's going. We got a couple of injuries. Eduardo's back. We got to wait for Carrasco to come back, you know, and we need Guillorme back on the field. And things need to get back in place. So, you know, I don't see it that way. Every series to me is important from here on out. As I see the Dodgers in the same light I do Chicago or the Nationals. Competition. and you got to confront it, you know, head on each and every night. Doesn't matter. So if they lose, they lose, but they need to come back and rebound. It's about continuing with their resiliency. So I could take a gut punch. I could take a sweep, but they better bounce back.
Mm-hmm. Rich, when looking at the schedule, I mean, you know, the reason I'm laughing like this is the fact that Major League Baseball is making them go to Pittsburgh, the Marlins, Milwaukee. That's fine. But you know what? You have one more Bay Area trip in store. Just I understand schedule making is rough, but like, come on now.
Well, when the Mets finished up with when they played Houston at the end of June, I think that the conversation was that there were only three games left on the schedule that started after 8:10 p.m. Eastern time. One of them being the Friday night game in Milwaukee, and then you have the Friday game in Friday and Saturday in Milwaukee. Then you have the Friday night game in Oakland. Does it make sense? No. I mean, the Mets have to. They go from they go to Milwaukee, then they go to Oakland, and they come back this way. So, who knows? You know, the scheduling is a little weird in that sense, but I like what Mike said. You know, if you're a Mets fan, you don't have to look any farther back than 2007, you know, and allow me to bring up a horrible memory for our listeners. And that is that, the Phillies had swept the Mets, right? I was at two of those games, and to get closer, they brought it down, I think, 4.5 games, or four, actually, with 2 weeks to play. And it's like, well, okay. The Mets played nobody but the Marlins and the Nationals the last 2 weeks of the season. They had a two series away, two series home. And it was like, well, like a four-game lead, you're playing those teams. Let's just brush off that Philly sweep and, you know, and win the division. Then we'll talk about the postseason. Well, okay. You know, we all know what happened. So to Mike's point, you have to beat whoever's on your schedule. We just saw the A's split with the Yankees. Other features of the schedule, the Mets have seven with the Pirates, who don't look very good these days. They have three with the Cubs, and the Cubs are pretty bad. And, you know, they have six with the Nationals. They have six with the Marlins. So it all seems to be pointing in the Mets' direction. The Mets have the weakest strength of schedule in Major League Baseball from this point out. And once they finish with the Dodgers, it gets even a lot weaker because you go by collective winning percentage. You take those three games against the Dodgers out, and the Mets' strength of schedule becomes even a bigger advantage, right? Okay, all those things are great. Those are all nice, fun facts to have. You still have to win the game. And we all know that, and we all know 2007, so they have to go out there and do it. In this period of time, the Braves have the eighth weakest schedule. So the Mets are, while the Mets have an advantage, it's not an enormous advantage. Like, the Braves have the hardest schedule. The Braves have the eighth weakest schedule. But the one thing I will point out is that the two things I'll point out, the Braves seven times, the Phillies are in a battle, for the wild card spot, and whether it's a spot or seeding, they're in a battle. They are going to play those games hard. Those are seven games. That's a lot when you have 33 left. That's like 20% of your games left. So that's, they have that. The Braves also have a West Coast trip, but only the difference is, instead of going to just Oakland, where obviously the A's are really struggling, the Braves have to go to Seattle, who is fighting for their playoff lives, and they're very good. So they have, a good team. So they have to go there. Then they have to go to San Francisco. Now, granted, the Giants, they're on the periphery. They're like six games out of a wild card. They may just be eliminated by then, or they may not be. They may be four or five games out, need every win. So the Braves have some tough notches, that they have to take care of. Now, granted, while the Mets are playing the Dodgers these 3 days, the Braves are playing the Rockies, who the Mets just played. Just have to win your games. That's the bottom line.
Bottom line, you have to win your games. And with everything we've just talked about, Mike, we got 5 minutes left before we've been on for an hour. So where do you want to go?
Let's go, Mets. we've talked about the subject numerous times. Let's rewind back to Old Timers Day a bit. Willie Mays, they retired number 24. I think it's appropriate. Conversation's over. It's done. And it blew me away. What say you guys?
Rich, go ahead.
I think Willie Mays' number makes sense to retire throughout baseball. Greatest living player, I think, is a given, right? Maybe the most talented player ever to play Major League Baseball. I think you can make that argument, too. I know a lot, you know, my previous generation, uncles, dad, all those folks, diehard Yankee fans, but they always said Willie Mays is the best player they ever saw. So anyway, maybe the greatest athlete player to ever play the game. Why not retire his number across baseball? So the Mets retiring it, I understand. I mean, I understand it's a Mrs. Payson thing. You know, that she was Giants fan and Willie Mays fan and brought him back to New York in 72 and all that. The counter argument to that that I've seen on Twitter is that, you know, the fact is Mays played a season and a half for the Mets, and he played a season and a half at 41 and 42. And he obviously didn't make an impact. He wasn't brought here for that reason. He was brought here to, so he could retire in New York. So should the New York Mets be retiring his number? As a tribute to Mrs. Payson, okay, understood. Beyond that, I saw somebody on Twitter, and I'll just, you know, leave it here, list out 60 other players who should be retired, have their numbers retired before Willie Mays, because they did more for the New York Mets, a lot, and obviously a lot more. So Mays' number is being retired by the Mets, not because of what he did as a Met, but because of Mrs. Payson. And again, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole again, but going back to the thing we talked about, saying he was great in New York, okay, but he was great for another franchise, does that mean that, you know, his number's retired? I don't know. We already talked about that. So I guess you could, it's how you look at it. That's my opinion.
I in no way view what he did on the field with the Mets in any of this. I think this is more ceremonial. We're just one of baseball's all-time greats and somebody who's deserving. You know, you can crunch the numbers. They're obvious. He's not the reason why they were National League champions in 73. But he helped. But I never take into account his playing days with the Mets when I think of number 24. And, yeah, Rich, this is about Joan Payson. And as the matriarch of this organization, if she wanted it, I want it. That's the way I see it.
And I'll swipe. I was just gonna swipe in and say I think Willie Mays transcends what he specifically did with the Mets, and that so happens to be a National League pennant as well. And so it's not just like Milwaukee with Hank Aaron, where he was able to get to 755. He got a pennant to get to his 660. Like, that has to count for something on top of Joan Payson, and as well on top of what he means not only to baseball but to National League baseball in New York. Go ahead, Rich.
No, I have nothing to add. I mean, I think that's right. I think if you're doing it for Mrs. Payson, none of us would be on this podcast with Mrs. Payson, right? I'm good with that. Totally good with that. I'm just saying, you know, there are two schools of thought. I don't really have a dog in this fight or a horse in this race, or that cliche is one way or the other. I see it both ways. I mean, when this one guy on Twitter was a guy who's had on this podcast, by the way, was adamant. You know, he's like, he gave a Met for every year that is far more deserving than Willie Mays. And you know, you're right, Mike. If you look at production as a New York Met, but forget it. I mean, obviously not. But for Mrs. Payson, for what he meant, you know, and the fact that he's the greatest living player maybe to ever put on a baseball uniform. You could make that argument, and it's just where you come down. I mean, to me, it's like, okay, when they put number 24 up there, I remember when they got Willie Mays, and I was a little tyke, and I remember, you know, hearing about this great guy, and I, you know, saw him play for the Giants. He looked old to me at the time, but they got this great guy, and everybody was excited, so I was excited, right? And little kids were excited. What other people get excited? So I have no problem with it. It's just, you know, again, I'm just saying there are two schools of thought on it.
And can I just say that they're playing the Athletics in Oakland on September 24th at 4:07 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. This is where I'm going to go next. Speaking of somebody who may be of deserving across baseball of his number being retired, the Mets play the Pirates at Citi Field on September 15th. And, Mike, this is Roberto Clemente Day. Now, maybe you can enlighten me a little bit more as to whether this is just a general baseball day or whether this is a national holiday that's been claimed. But September 15th, 7:20 p.m. against the Pirates, which is obviously fitting. I mean, do you know more about this specific Citi Field Day?
I'm kind of caught me off guard there. I don't know if Citi Field will be doing anything in particular. But, you know, Roberto Clemente Day is something, and it's been something for quite some time. Very deserving.
Yeah, you know, I think this is, you know, Rich, I'll go to you here, that this is something I think you could very well argue. You know, you mentioned in terms of baseball retiring certain players' numbers across baseball. Right now, Jackie Robinson is the only one, 42. But I do think all of these players' numbers are deserving. And you could argue that A-Rod never should have worn number 3 anywhere.
You know, and it comes down to, again, numbers being retired, people get emotional about it. People get, like, angry over it, you know? And if you told me Major League Baseball, everybody's going to retire 24 because, you know, by consensus of people at the time, greatest living player ever, I'm okay with that, totally fine with that. If you wanted to tell me retire number 21 for Clemente across Major League Baseball, I'm fine with that because of his humanitarian. I don't care what the freak he did on the field. I mean, the guy was a humanitarian. Died doing humanitarian things. Good enough for me. Retire 21. But, you know, people get crazy about that stuff. You know, people then start with the counter argument. You know, you retire Clemente, other people do humanitarian things. What about their number? It just gets to be this crazy thing. It's just, there's no right answer, you know, because at some point emotion factors in. We take the emotional approach about Mays because Mrs. Payson wanted it. Okay. I mean, that's, but other, you know, people who don't have that investment might giggle and say, why are the Mets retiring Willie Mays' number? They don't get it, you know? And so it's, I guess what I'm saying is while numbers play a part of it, number retirement is so multifactorial. It's hard to apply logic to it. I think.
And this is where I have to be honest. I mean, I'm so biased when it comes to Clemente and Willie Mays. You know, when I was six, seven, eight, nine, I knew more about Clemente and Willie Mays because of my aunt and uncle, because they were their favorite players, respectively. I knew more about them than I had accumulated knowledge in school. That's how much I knew about them then. You know, so when you bring up Clemente or Willie Mays, you know, 1974, my aunt's teaching me how to keep score at Shea Stadium, and all I hear is about Willie Mays, Willie Mays, Willie Mays, Willie Mays. That's how I learned. I learned about his whole career, and especially his last two seasons with the Mets. So you bring up Clemente, which is my other uncle's favorite player. That's all we talked about, and still to this day, we text back and forth, and we call each other. and not a baseball conversation goes by that we don't bring up Roberto Clemente. So I'm ultra biased, and that's why I step back. And when it comes to retiring numbers, you know, it's a tricky question. People are funny, just like Rich says, and it spurs a lot of emotion. But that's where my bias is, and you know, so I have a great, great passion for both ball players.
That's well said, and I'm going to try to make this September 15th game and see how the Mets honor Roberto Clemente while playing the Pirates. Rich, before I'm going to go to you first, before we go anywhere, is there anything else you wanted to discuss?
No, I think we hit the key points. I think the only other thing I would say back to the current Mets is, you know, the bullpen's a problem, and I know it's not going to be a podcast in and of itself, but they're set to get back Tylor Megill, who they're saying would be a bullpen piece, which surprised me a bit. Guys that successful as a starter, it's like, oh, well, you're on the bullpen, dude. Okay, I mean, I guess it makes more sense than booting Carrasco out of the rotation or Walker, I suppose, although I personally would think about Megill back in the rotation and Walker in the bullpen, but anyway. So they're getting Megill. Drew Smith is on the doorstep of coming back. And Joey Lucchese is another guy who, remember, he is starting a rehab. And why is that important? Well, Joely Rodriguez isn't really fooling anybody, as they say, you know, as the lefty in the bullpen. You give me Joey Lucchese with that chirp, if he's effective, if he does well through his rehab and all that, and you ask him to get a lefty out, you know, one or two outs a game, come in to get, you know, that Matt Olson in the middle of the game when you need that out. That's something to watch. You know, the Mets probably didn't add enough at the deadline. Maybe the reason they didn't add to the bullpen as much is they knew they had Megill, Smith, and possibly Lucchese coming back. And even if you get two of those guys, that's not bad. So reinforcements are on the way in that beleaguered bullpen. Just thought I'd throw that out.
Well mentioned. Mike, where do you want to go from there?
Very quickly, a little piece of information. Local rivalry going on, the Brooklyn Cyclones and the Hudson Valley Renegades, the Yankees High A affiliate. There's 12 games left in the season. Cyclones trail the Renegades by a half game in second half standings. 12 games left. Let's go, Cyclones.
Let's go, Cyclones, indeed. And without further ado, you have been listening to the Metsian Podcast. And we will go to our final word. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. And I'm going to first start with Michael Colon for his final word. And as we like to say around these here parts, shameless plug.
Take a bite. I shameless plug, Brooklyn Charlie bloggers. I'm actually replaying the 1890s Brooklyn bridegroom season. Anyway. Let's continue to take one last bite out of the dog days of summer. As you say, Sam, let's try and sweep the Dodgers. Let's go, Mets.
Let's go, Mets. Rich, your final word.
My final word is stretch. Like I said earlier, I'll finish where I started. It is the stretch drive. And, guys, let's think about this. In the 61st season of the Mets, so many times they've been playing out the string and not an active participant in the stretch run. The New York Mets are real. They're in a pennant race. They're in the stretch run. They will make the playoffs. They have a 99% chance of making the playoffs, according to Baseball Reference. So let's just be thankful that the stretch run is here and the New York Mets are in it.
Let's go, Mets, and give us your shameless plug, I should have said.
Oh, yeah, Mesmerized Online. I do my business, my baseball business pieces, my offbeat stuff like baseball attendance and stuff like that. I let the other writers handle stuff, you know, like OPS and slugging percentage and who they should get at the trade deadline. That's all very important. I like to do the stuff that nobody else does, you know, like baseball businessy stuff, TV ratings, things like that. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thank you. And converted Mets fan, I don't write on there much anymore, but there's always plenty to take a look at, especially how I converted from Yankees Sullivan, the story of Brooklyn and its Dodgers, which you couldn't tell the Mets story without it, regardless of how much we should look to the future. And that's my final word, to the future. We need to continue to push on. We need to continue to push forward. And we need to lock this division down. Let's go Mets, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Rich. Take care.
Let's go Mets. Thank you.